fasten your seatbelt, turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
Many rivers to cross, but I can't seem to find my way over. Wandering, I am lost as I try.
It's been 7 months since central Wisconsin was shocked by a multiple shooting incident that took the lives of four innocent people in a half hour's time. And today we're going to see if we can make some sense of the tragedy and learn some lessons from it. I'm Glenn Moberg. Our guests today on Route 51 are Everest Metro Police Chief Wally Sparks, who lost his detective Jason Weiland that day, former radio host Bob Look, who lost his wife Diane, and James Graham Jennings of the Women's Community, an organization with ties to Jason Weiland, Diane Look, and another victim, attorney Sarah Court Sand. The fourth victim, Karen Barclay, died trying to protect the estranged wife of the killer. You'll also hear today from Hmong leader Mao Kang of Wausau. This is a difficult topic, and it touches on many issues, the problem of domestic violence, the dangers faced every day by our police officers, and the lack of respect that is all too often shown to them. The ready availability of guns, including semi-automatic rifles and handguns, to those with mental problems, anger issues, or bad intentions. And cultural traditions involving the Hmong community because of the identity of the killer and the woman he was stalking. We invite you to listen to the discussion today, and if you feel you can add something to it, we invite you to call in at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a comment on our website, wpr.org/route51. Again, that's wpr.org/route51. Thanks to all three of you for being with us today.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
Chief Sparks, you wanted to do this show. I know you're still grieving your loss. Your department is grieving your loss. Why did you want to do this radio program? What do you hope we accomplish today?
Well, I think it's important for people to understand that, you know, incidents like this occur, and some of these are – you know, you can't prevent. So it's how do you respond is to these events and, you know, how our officers respond. I'm really proud of what they did, how they responded under pretty harrowing circumstances and how they've responded even afterwards and held together and not only supporting the memory of Detective Weiland but, you know, growing closer as a law enforcement family. And then – you know, there's some things that I think we need to learn and move forward and hopefully some steps we can take as a community to try and avoid something like this from ever happening again.
What can you tell us about Jason Weiland, both as an officer and as a person?
Jason was he's extremely dedicated as a detective. He was the type of person you wouldn't want on your tail if you did something wrong. Tenacious, but he had just a wonderful personality, joked around with everybody. So behind the scenes, I mean – law enforcement is a community probably like no other, and unless you're part of that, you kind of don't understand. And, you know, humor is a big part of being able to diffuse some of the difficult things we see and deal with every
right.
day. And it's a family. It's such a close-knit family, and if you're not part of it, you know, it's hard to understand. But incidents like this draw us even closer together.
Bob, look, you too are mourning a very personal loss, your wife Diane. Why did you feel it was important to be here today?
Silence is never going to help. This is something that had to be discussed and identified for what it is and what we can do to help prevent this in the future. The worst thing to do is to just crawl into a hole and just not want to be part of the world again.
What do you remember most about Diane?
My very best friend. She saved me. Married for over 25 years. Met her in 1988 when I first started working here in Wausau. And the reason why I'm probably still alive today is her. From my radio days of the early days where it's burned the candle at both ends and even in the middle too, to getting a little more balance in my life. And not a better person I've ever met.
It's been 7 months. Have you been able to achieve any sense of reconciliation or peace of mind after that time?
There will never be peace of mind. It just, you know, whenever they say, oh, I hope he finds peace, that just doesn't exist. It's the memories is what drives me to do things better, to try to improve things so that we can hopefully have these things as just distant memories and not things that are constantly happening every few weeks or months.
Diane Look, Jason Weiland, and another victim, Sarah Quartzsand, they all worked with the women's community. The fourth victim, Karen Barclay, died trying to protect the wife of the killer. Tell us your recollections of these women and your impressions of them.
Well, every time something like this happens, it affects the staff of the women's community and myself very personally because it is our entire mission in this work to prevent these things from happening. And then this particular incident was even greater because we had personal ties to three of these victims. So Diane made jewelry, and she for a number of years donated the jewelry that she made to our fundraisers so that we could raise money so that we could continue our services and help support other victims in the community. And she was just really supportive in understanding the issues and knowing why it's critically important that victims have support and that victims are believed. And that's why she was also helping protect this woman from her estranged husband. Sarah Quart was a family law attorney who and also a guardian ad litem. So we worked professionally for a number of years, seeing that as she was trying to deal with family cases and understand how domestic violence plays a role when you're trying to determine the best interests of children, an extremely difficult and hard job. And she tried to do that to the best of her ability, and she really went out of her way to understand how violence plays a part in that. And part of that, then she also came to the women's community and became a volunteer on one of our fundraising events because, again, she understands and recognizes the critical importance of advocacy and of reaching out to victims and knowing that there's a place where they can go for help. And so she became part of our agency family as well in supporting our efforts and trying to make sure we can provide our services. And Detective Weiland was a critical part of our sexual assault intervention team in the county and our sexual assault response team. So he was also part of our advocacy family in that we worked very closely with him in responding to sexual assault survivors and children who are sexually abused. So we feel the loss quite personally as well.
We're going to look back at the events of March 22nd, the outpouring of support from the community in the days that followed, and some of the remarks about Detective Jason Weiland at a funeral that was attended by thousands of people. Here's the news story that I filed for Wisconsin Public Radio back in March. It's one of the worst things you can hear on a police scanner. Wednesday, March 22nd, 1:30 p.m., Everest Metro Detective Jason Weiland was gunned down at an apartment complex in Weston.
1279, we have an officer down. Shots fired. Officer down.
It was the third shooting that afternoon. At 1 o'clock, Karen Barclay and Diane Look, two employees at a nearby bank, died protecting a co-worker from the shooter, her estranged husband. Minutes after that, Sarah Quartzsand, the woman's attorney, was shot and killed at a law office. Now the suspect, 45-year-old Nengmai Vang, was refusing to surrender. At about 5 o'clock, shots rang out again. Vang would later die from his injuries. Everest Metro Police Chief Wally Sparks held a somber news conference the next day.
Detective Weiland was well-trained, and his brave response likely prevented other deaths. Jason was a phenomenal officer, and he was part of our family.
The shootings both shocked the greater Wausau community and united it. Everywhere you look, streetlights are decked in ribbons. Blue for Jason Weiland, pink and red for Karen Barclay, Diane Look, and Sarah Quartzsand. Among those reeling from the attacks are the region's Hmong community.
This is an action taken by one individual, and it's an act of evil.
Cam Tong Yang of Wausau's Hmong American Center is helping to coordinate a fundraising drive with other Hmong leaders.
That it was a member of the Hmong community who caused this. It's terrible. And regardless of what race the suspect is, to lose four of our community members, one of them being a police officer, is tragic.
Shootings like this aren't particular to any group of people, according to Jane Graham Jennings of the women's community, Wausau's domestic violence shelter.
Every mass shooting that is domestic violence related, the trends are not anything particular to one culture. They span all cultures.
Jennings worries that because the victim's co-workers and attorney were targeted, it may keep other women from seeking help and make others reluctant to help them.
This happened because one individual felt he was entitled to hurt other human beings, and we have to stop that acceptance.
A week later, Jason Weiland was laid to rest. 3,500 people attended the memorial service, including hundreds of police officers from around the country. Among them, Lieutenant Joseph Giambroni of the Chicago Police Department.
These officers paid the ultimate price for the freedom, for the country, for the members of society that will be the first ones to spit at them and speak ill of them, that they will stand there and defend them to their dying breath. That's why we're here for them.
At the service at D.C. Everest High School, Jason Weiland's young daughter, Anna, thanked the law enforcement officers in the crowd for protecting our country and added, "That is just what my dad did." His longtime friend, Wausau Police Captain Greg Hagenbucher, spoke about his sense of humor.
Jason, I miss you. You have graced my life more than you'll ever know. I love you. God bless our hero.
Many at the service wore Green Bay Packers jerseys adorned with Weiland's name and badge number, including Nate Owen.
He's one of my best friends.
Nate Owen and Jason Weiland were once roommates.
It's absolutely amazing, just the love that everyone is showing for my fallen friend. It's just really remarkable.
That afternoon, a slow-moving procession of squad cars stretched for more than 2 miles. For those affected by the shooting and the officers who served them, there are still more miles to travel. Glenn Moberg, Wisconsin Public Radio News. And our guests today on Route 51 are Everest Metro Police Chief Wally Sparks, Jane Graham Jennings of the women's community, and former radio host Bob Look, who lost his wife, Diane, in the tragedy. Chief Sparks, if you could comment on the outpouring of support for Jason and his family from police officers all around the country.
It was absolutely unbelievable. The amount of people showing up, but not just that, the community. I mean, when we rode through that funeral procession for, 12 miles, there were people lining the street the entire way. Cards, letters, people showing up at the police department, and it's continued. It's so refreshing. You know, you believe that there's community support, and it's unfortunate that, you know, it takes a tragic incident like this for it to be just completely so obvious and so glaring. But that's a testament to the community that we live in. You know, you see incidents in law enforcement. You got 1 million law enforcement officers in this country and probably 10 million police contacts a day. And we'll hear about 3 or 4 a year where somebody did something wrong, and it's on the headlines and it's front page news. What you don't see is all those – out of all those interactions, all the positive things that officers are doing every day. And it just reinforced why we do what we do and why officers are willing to put their lives on the line to protect and serve the community.
There's a cadre of officers who attend police funerals on a regular basis called the Brotherhood of the Fallen. And one of the people in that group, Lieutenant Joseph Giambroni of the Chicago Police Department, we heard him in that piece. He said these officers pay the ultimate price for the freedom, for the country, for the members of society that will be the first ones to spit at them and speak ill of them. They will stand there and defend them to their dying breath, and that's why we're here for them. How much outright hostility do officers have to deal with on a day-to-day basis?
You deal with conflict daily. You know, and obviously, you know, Jane's going to talk about some of the domestic stuff, and that's probably one of the scariest situations you walk into. You know, you need to be attentive and show that compassion and the understanding and try to, you know, be there for the victim, but you also have to have your head on a swivel. You know, you have to have your guard up. You have to be constantly vigilant because you have to anticipate, you know, the unknown. You have to anticipate what could happen. And striking that balance is not an easy thing to do. And, you know, the police officers do this every single day. And in the worst of circumstances, they'll be the first ones there being kind, compassionate, protecting people, the very people that are attacking them. They're still there like that officer said, you know, we're going to be the ones defending their right to even protest, even if they're protesting us.
Jane Graham Jennings, expand, if you could, on your comments in the story that we just heard. You said this happened because one individual felt he was entitled to hurt other human beings, and we have to stop that acceptance.
That is what domestic abuse is about, in understanding that someone believes they're entitled to hurt other people. And the dynamics of that, that we try to educate people about and understanding why this is critically important. Because in the history, as we learn more about this and as we recognize this as a social problem, the questions that we ask historically tend to be about victims' behavior. And we keep asking those questions, and still we hear have the same problem. We need to stop asking that question, because if victims could stop the violence, they would. Victims are terrified on so many different levels that we need to recognize the people responsible for this are people who believe they're entitled to use power and control to hurt their family members, to hurt their community members. That's what it's about, and we have to get to that conversation and ask the question, why do we allow someone to be entitled or feel entitled? How do we support that, whether we recognize our support of that or not? That's the question we need to ask.
Bob, look, ordinary citizens, people like your wife Diane and her friend Karen Barclay, they don't expect to have to deal with deadly force when they show up for work.
No. In fact, that particular, day, when I left for my job down in Wisconsin Rapids that morning, I was a married man. By 2 o'clock, I was a widower. And people keep, they always ask me, well, aren't you angry about it? I says, well, I'm not angry as much as I'm frustrated that something like this can happen this easily and still happens this easily. I was watching a program last evening and showed since the Las Vegas shooting here in this country, 896 people have been killed in gun-related incidents here in this country. Now, that was as of last night, but I'm sure we're over into the 900 range already today. The easy accessibility is something that really has to be addressed, and addressed by serious people with some real solutions, because it just should not be this easy.
The National Rifle Association is adamant that people have a right to arm themselves for hunting and for self-protection. But what do you think of that message?
Well, the NRA, it's a nice name. The National Rifle Association. When you hear the word rifle, you think of, a hunting rifle, guy taking his son out going. And I'm all for that. I have no problem with that. But my problem is what is the actual use, and what is the actual meaning of handguns? What's the actual use and meaning of assault rifles? And why are they so easily accessible in the hands of people? I'm old enough to remember the issue of Saturday Night Specials back in the 60s when there was a big talk about where you could just walk into some place and buy a gun and do whatever in the heck you wanted to do with it. I asked that question even to my friends who are gun owners, and they're responsible individuals, and I have all the confidence that they are responsible, and they even have a hard time arguing that point. Why are these that accessible or that easily to collect?
Some gun rights supporters would probably say that Diane would be alive today if she had carried a handgun in her purse that day. What do you say to people who would give you that argument?
Well, they are fools. I don't know how else I can say it. They are fools. You can have a conceal and carry, and if somebody just decides to come up behind you, you don't know. I watched the video from the bank, not the redacted and edited version, because I wanted to get my hands around or understand what happened. As a husband, and watching the video, and in my heart of hearts, I could not understand what happened. She could have, been armed to the gills with whatever weapon in the world. It would not have stopped that situation. It's a silly argument.
Chief Sparks, what do you say to people like Bob who think we need to curb the easy access that people have to semi-automatic rifles and handguns?
Yeah, you know, to me, obviously, you know, like I carry a gun daily. When you're dealing with evil people and people intended on doing bad things, it doesn't matter what the means are. You know, when I look at, you know, we've had 8 homicides since 2006, and 3 of those were stabbings. You're never going to be able to take away all means of people to do harm. To me, it really comes down to the people. Why, as Jane said, why do they feel they have a right to hurt anyone else? If people are intent on doing evil and harming others, you can do it with vehicles, you can do it with knives, you can do it with, you know, a lot of different things. So I don't focus on the instrument. I focus on the person and the mentality and the mindset, and how do we get people, like Jane said, how do we get them from thinking it's okay to do this?
A police officer, do you ever worry that your officers might be outgunned because of all the firepower that's out on the streets?
Well, we have responded to that. You know, last year we upgraded and put ballistic helmets and shields and stuff in our squads, but that's not going to prevent – it didn't prevent Officer Weiland getting killed. He had tactical gear on. He had a ballistic helmet. Are we at times outgunned? Yeah. We had our SWAT team there. We have all the special weapons and stuff. But it comes down to somebody who is intent on doing evil and hurting others. You're not going to be able to prevent that through any legislation. There's already a laws against committing murder and hurting people. It doesn't stop them. So even gun, you know, increasing severity gun laws is not going to stop that certain people. You know, law-abiding people are going to follow the laws. They're not going to hurt people. They're going to do the right things. But we deal with probably 5% of the population, you know, on a day-to-day basis. And it's that small percentage that causes the issue.
Now, Jane Graham Jennings, I've seen pictures of you on Facebook hunting. And a lot of women carry guns for their own protection. As a head of a domestic violence shelter, what's your opinion about gun control and the easy accessibility of weapons?
Well, there's some very alarming data in correlation between domestic violence and gun ownership. The majority of domestic violence homicides are gun-related. So there are some really disturbing trends that we need to recognize and talk about. Part of that is you know, we tend to get in these conversations that it's an either-or, and we really need to talk about there are many things that are true at the same time. So either-or, it's not either you have guns or you don't. We need people to be educated about guns and understanding what that means, and really to make sure that people who shouldn't have guns don't. So there's really alarming data around domestic violence and gun ownership. And we know we do lethality assessments. And if the perpetrator of abuse has a firearm, that's a red flag that this family is in greater danger, because firearms can happen in a second. The homicides happen in an instant. Firearms allows that ability. So it's a conversation that we really need to have, and not either you like guns or you don't. They're separate things. And it's funny, a little bit funny, that I'm a hunter and I own guns. And people that I work with, peers, have a hard time reconciling that because they think it's either or, and it's not. A hunting is not violence. Killing people with intent to hurt someone, shooting a human being with intent to hurt another human being, that's violence, and they're different things.
But again, I have no problem with the hunting factor. That's not even part of my, you know, argument. My argument is the convenience factor, the easily accessibility of handguns, and for weapons that were basically designed and built not for hunting purposes, but to inflict as much damage and destruction on other human beings. That accessibility is what I even responsible gun owners like yourself, and I've got so many friends who are responsible gun owners that are good friends of mine. They go hunting, and I'm all for it. I says, hey, that's your thing. Do it. But it's like they even shake their head like, why would you want to have an AK-47? Why would you want to have handguns and walking all over the place with it? It doesn't make sense to them.
Today on Route 51, we're revisiting the Wausau area multiple shooting incident with Everest Metro Police Chief Wally Sparks, Jane Graham Jennings of the Women's Community, and former radio host Bob Look, whose wife Diane was one of the victims. I'm Glenn Moberg. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call us at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a comment on our webpage, wpr.org/route51. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll hear from Hmong leader Mao Kang of Wausau. First, here's Simon and Garfunkel.
I'll take your part, oh, when darkness comes, and pain is all around, like a bridge over troubled water, I will lay me down.
Support for WPR comes from the University of Wisconsin Survey Center, committed to advancing science through innovative data collection and study design, providing web, phone, and in-person research methods. uwsc.wisc.edu. Support also comes from Christine Bremer-Moogley of the personal injury law firm Bremer & Trollop, committed to protecting the rights of accident victims throughout Wisconsin. Bremer & Trollop, because the right results matter most. Bremer-Law.com.
Parsons and Emmylou Harris taking us into our next segment of Route 51 as we look back on the Wausau area's March 22nd multiple shooting incident with Everest Metro Police Chief Wally Sparks, Jane Graham Jennings of the Women's Community, and former radio host Bob Luck, whose wife Diane was one of the victims. I'm Glenn Moberg. Again, if you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-780-9742. I want to talk a little about the Hmong community and its reaction to the killings in this segment. Both the intended victim and the killer, Ning Mai Vang, were Hmong. Cam Tong Yang of the Hmong American Center said this is an action taken by one individual and it's an act of evil. That it was a member of the Hmong community who caused this is terrible. And Jane, you said at the time that this is something that happens across every culture.
That's true, yes.
But still, Chief Sparks, when I talked with you earlier this week, you shared some disturbing statistics about the number of local homicides that involve domestic violence in the Hmong community.
Well, just in the village of Weston, since 2006, we've had 8 homicides. 6 of those were committed by Hmong men and were domestic related. We had an additional case where a Hmong man shot his wife in the chest, but she survived. So, you're looking at the statistics, when you've got 75% of your homicides committed by a 10% segment of the population, you know, that's troublesome. When you look at what happened, I mean, the big thing is how do we prevent this from happening again? So you have to look at these factors. And the other part that comes into play is, you know, shortly after this incident, within the first couple of weeks, there were 3 individuals arrested that all referenced the March 22nd shooting, 3 Hmong men who threatened to do the exact same thing. They all blamed Ning Mai Vang's wife. She was the problem. She didn't do what the man said. Everything was her fault. So that tells me that there is still a problem. When you have 3 people stepping forward and all basically blaming the wife for the killing of 4 innocent people in this community, there's some mindset that needs to be changed. And I don't want this to be taken as this is not an indictment of the Hmong community, but how do you overlook those parallels and these follow-up arrests?
Is this the result, Jane Graham Jennings, of an old tribal culture, old attitudes? And don't we have old attitudes like that in cultures all over the world?
We do. I mean, that's why I still have a job, is because we have attitudes that say women have a certain place and men are authorities. I mean, that's kind of the gist of what we're talking about. Within the Hmong community, as I learned from our Hmong advocates, part of what's so beautiful about the communities, they're so tight-knit, and they have support for one another in amazing ways. But it's also problematic when the support is against an individual, and an individual, and in my experience as an individual woman who is blamed for all the family problems, when in fact they are being a victim of abuse in that household, but the community blames them and holds, tries to tell them if they would just be better and do whatever they're told, things will be fine. So there are some nuances that exist that we need to address. Yes, this attitude permeates all cultures that I am aware of, but there's some specific things that we're trying to address because that statistic is very alarming and it's concerning in our community.
Bob, look, your wife Diane was a very good friend of the Hmong woman who was being stalked that day.
We were very good friends for a long time, co-workers and her and her sister. We've known them for years. Very, you know, at social events, you know, we've been friends for a long time. And after this all happened, I had to reach out to the person who was being targeted to let her know that, you know, there's no blame coming from me. She's a victim just as much as my wife and Karen and the rest of the people. There by the grace of God, and in fact, my wife kind of leading her out the emergency exit to get out of the bank. You know, and basically,
she really put herself and Karen Barkley did between her and the killer.
Yeah.
Several years ago, General Vang Pao, who's much revered by Hmong people around the world, came to Wausau to address the problem of violence against women by Hmong men. He spoke on the UW Marathon County campus. Let's listen to some of the things he said in 2009 through a translator.
We are Hmong. We are smart. We are very beautiful people. We have a great culture, and we don't want to have a bad name for Hmong people. Do your best to be a role model. I'm telling you today to stop. Some men in America today had abused the word freedom, so they go and disrespect a woman and to the part where, you know, the homicide takes place. The husband has to respect the wife as he respects himself. And the wife, you have to be a good role model, so that way you be a good example for your family and children.
Chief Wally Sparks, you were on stage that night with Vang Pao.
I was.
Your reaction?
The message was good. Unfortunately, I don't think the reception was what it needed to be. And, you know, it was interesting sitting on that panel discussion and having all the Klan leaders sit in the front, you know, right in front of General Vang Pao as he's providing his message. And I'm looking at the Klan leaders, and you can see that some of them are engaged and listening, and some of them were sitting with their arms crossed, scowls on their faces, and you could just tell that they didn't want to hear it. And it was obvious that you're only reaching a portion of the people who really need to make the change. And as Jane said, there's some absolutely wonderful things about the Hmong community. The fact they are such a close-knit society. They take care of their family. The respect for the elderly in the Hmong community is something that I just think is phenomenal, because that seems to be lacking in today's day. But there are some cultures that have to go. We had a listening session with Hmong women. Jane was there, Sheriff Parks, Deputy Chief Ben Bliven from Wausau PD, Teresa Whetstone from the DA's office. It was very eye-opening for me, and I'm familiar with some of it, but that session really hit home, because a lot of these women – and first of all, they couldn't tell their husband they were going, or they would have probably been victimized had they known they were there. But most of them have all been victims of domestic violence, and all of them said, well, we can't go to the police, or if we call – our husband says if we call the police, they'll kill us. As law enforcement, I got into this job to protect those that really can't protect themselves, the most vulnerable in our society. So when we talk about some of these Hmong issues, it's not that – I don't want anybody to think or take this as, well, I don't like Hmong people. Quite to the contrary. It's our duty to stand up for those who really don't have that voice and can't protect themselves.
I want to bring a Hmong voice into this conversation right now. Jane Graham Jennings, you've got a Southeast Asian coordinator and outreach director, Mao Kang. She's also a Hmong leader. She was voted onto the Hmong 18 Council of Wisconsin's leadership team back in 2014. And that's the first time that's happened for a Hmong woman. I talked to her yesterday and asked her how Wausau's Hmong community reacted to the shooting deaths on March 22nd.
I think some of them feeling like ashamed. Why did he do that? That's not, you know, acceptable. But there's still, you know, some men that are still call him heroes because he has, you know, killed people that's helping victims. So it just depends on, you know, who they are.
What is it that would make a man call somebody like that a hero?
I guess it's embedded in their culture. Divorce or violence like this, if anything occurs like this, anybody helps the victim, they are being blamed or victimized. Like, for example, me working in this field, I always get that because saying that, you know, I'm helping the victim, I'm helping the women. And domestic violence in the Hmong community is silence. You can't say anything. You can't tell anybody. If you do and anybody try to help you, then somebody is trying to put things in your head and is trying to break the marriage. So that's why it's so hard for people, you know, to come and help victims.
A few years ago, General Vang Pao appeared in Wausau and had a message to Hmong people saying that Hmong men needed to respect Hmong women. How was that message received?
To some men, they really respect that. That's why they pull the core committee. The core committee is a group of 5 women, 6 men under the umbrella of the 18 Clan Council to making sure that within their bylaws, in their handbook resolution, to be included women and children and making sure that everybody, you know, will have equal rights.
You've been working in the field of domestic violence for many, many years. What can be done to turn those old cultural attitudes around?
I think due to lack of funding, lack of resource, lack of education, trainings, I think we need more of that in our community, developing, you know, more resources, information, education that will really help in bringing the community together. This is not just a Hmong issue or a white or a black, you know, issue. This is all issue that we all need to come to the table. We all need to come together and to understand and to do more cross-cultural training and more awareness on domestic violence in all culture.
Mao, is there anything you'd like to add?
I hope, you know, that with this tragedy, it's not going to divide us, that it's going to bring all of us together and find a way how we can, you know, be working together to be united.
That's Mao Kang of Wausau, a member of the Hmong 18 Council of Wisconsin's leadership team and the Southeast Asian Outreach Director for the women's community. Jane Graham Jennings, your reaction to what you just heard.
I've been working with Mao for almost 16 years now, and so these are very similar conversations that we have quite a bit. I've learned a lot from her and look to her for guidance on how we can address these issues and to make sure that we are being as culturally competent as possible. It's kind of a tricky line when we want to say there are specific things that we need to address because we don't want it to appear in any way that there's a discrimination or that we're singling out the Hmong culture as having some kind of more violence than others, because that's not the case. However, there are some very unique things within the Hmong culture that contribute and lend itself to women not being able to have a voice and to women being really terrified. In general, most victims of domestic violence are prone to recant when law enforcement gets involved. They change their story, and there's a variety of reasons for that that could take an entire day to explain. But within the Hmong culture, there's some specific things that happen that make it even more difficult for Hmong victims to come forward and to maintain a feeling of safety. There's an entire community pressure that if they don't recant or don't change their story, they get pressure from clan leaders, they get pressure from family members, they get so much pressure to just fall in line that they often do, and they really feel extremely powerless and voiceless. And so we're trying to let them know that there is a way that you can be better, and there are other Hmong people. We have 3 Hmong advocates at the women's community and then other Hmong advocates around the state who understand the issues and will support you, and you don't have to be oppressed so much and be so afraid of your community.
Bob, look, your reaction to what you just heard.
As I said before, the people that work with my wife from the Hmong community have become friends over the years with us, and they're great people. That was one of the – when this incident happened, and one of the things that I started to realize that the community was starting to – there were some people taking sides. And I wanted to make it as plain as possible, and I talked with one of the television folks here in town for on the record, so people would know that in no way, shape, or form do I hold the Hmong community responsible or the Hmong community or blame them for the incident. This was one individual, a greedy, selfish individual who created this mess, and I'm not going to lay this on any ethnic or a background of a culture that maybe I'm not familiar with, because that just isn't the case.
Chief Sparks, how do you call attention to a problem of cultural attitudes if it exists without risking a backlash? And I guess I'm asking you for specifics. What are you and other law enforcement officials doing right now to try to address this and change the cultural attitudes?
Well, one of the things was the formation of the Wausau Metro Strong Group. We created a domestic violence committee as part of that. I was asked to chair that. And part of it is an educational piece. And Jane touched on – and when you talked to your interview with Mao, she touched on this Hmong handbook, which is some English, some in Hmong. And from my understanding is I think very few Hmong people actually even know what's in that handbook or have access to it. I think since General Vang Pao has passed away, there's a little bit of a void in leadership, and it's kind of segmented, you know, by individual clans. And I think part of it is, as Mao said, is that educational piece. Get that handbook and talk about the things that all the clan leaders are supposed to have agreed to. And I think if they were to follow some of that, and I don't think a lot of people in the Hmong community, both men and women, truly understand what it is they're supposed to follow. A lot of this is word of mouth handed down, and when you don't have the handbook or something to refer to on, this is what we have agreed to, or this is how we should respond, and this is what we should do in these particular circumstances, then you're left down to word of mouth, and you know, you can have somebody that has, you know, an improper view of what it should be, and somebody who has that just male dominant, no, you have to control a wife, you're in charge, you can't put up with this. So
get it in writing.
So one of the things we're working on is getting that handbook translated. That's kind of the first step, and then I think we need that educational piece. And I think what we're really looking for is male leadership within the Hmong community to step up like General Vang Pao did and say, this is wrong. Talk about what's wrong and talk about the right ways. Respect your wife. Treat her as an equal. Because when you get domestic violence, and that plays in every community, and that's really the crux of the issue, is they put themselves above somebody and feel that they're in charge and they have the authority to control them.
Today on Route 51, we're revisiting the Wausau area multiple shooting incident with Everest Metro Police Chief Wally Sparks, Jane Graham Jennings of the Women's Community, and former radio host Bob Look, whose wife Diane was one of the victims. I'm Glenn Moberg. We're going to take a short break. Here's Vince Gill.
Take each moment and live each moment in peace eternally. Let there be peace on earth. Let it begin with me.
Support for WPR comes from the Children's Hospital of Wisconsin Foster Care Program, dedicated to helping thousands of Wisconsin foster kids connect with caring families. More about being a foster parent is at chw.org/TFC. Support also comes from the Woodson Art Museum in Wausau, presenting the 2017 Birds in Art exhibition, with all new artwork by 114 artists through November 26th. LYWAM.org.
Will the circle be unbroken by and by law?
The Nitty Gritty Dirt Band and Doc Watson taking us into our final segment on Route 51 as we look back on the Wausau area's March 22nd multiple shooting incident with Everest Metro Police Chief Wally Sparks, Jane Graham Jennings of the Women's Community, and former radio host Bob Look, whose wife Diane was one of the victims. I'm Glenn Moberg. Jane, you wanted to add something to our conversation from the last segment.
I think it's important, you know, some of the things that we're trying to do, because in understanding how I've heard both Chief Sparks and Bob saying, how do we move forward from this? Because we can't change what happened. And part of what we realize, we want to make sure that we don't have two completely separate communities. So part of what's important, last week we provided a workshop for family law attorneys and for law enforcement in understanding the history of how Hmong people came to the country, and then also understanding the process which Hmong victims, when they're experiencing domestic violence, how they go through a clan system in their community. So I think part of what we try to do also is really do some cross education, so understanding from Hmong families' perspective and what their roles are like, and then having the clan leaders understand the laws of Wisconsin.
Chief Sparks, you're retiring as police chief.
Yep.
Was Jason Weiland's death a factor in that decision?
No, that was kind of my timeline to begin with. So,
and Bob Look, you. Stepped away from radio for a while. Do you think you'll ever get back behind the microphone again?
I hope so. But I just needed to really just kind of reevaluate, because things have changed, obviously. And where I go and what I do, I'm a little bit more open to some other opportunities I maybe wouldn't have thought of. But I just want to take a little time off for myself.
At Jason Weiland's funeral, the Reverend Jerry Morris, in a prayer, said, "God, we are not okay with this." How difficult is it, Chief Sparks, to keep the faith when something like this happens?
Well, there's evil in the world. You know, if you have faith, if you don't have faith, then there is no hope. And I have hope, and I have faith that this community will not only rebound, but that we'll learn from this. Because, you know, if we can't learn from things that happen in our lives and we can learn from history, we're destined to repeat it. So my focus is, and I'm sure Jane and Bob agree, is what can we learn from this incident? How can we become better as a community, and how do we avoid incidents like this from occurring again? And if we don't address that for the sake of political correctness or having somebody offended, it starts with sitting down, really discussing the issues and say, how can we be better as a community?
We're down to our last minute. Bob, look, your final thoughts. Where do we go from here as a community?
Love thy neighbor as thyself.
Jane Graham Jennings?
There's help available for people. Ask for help and help us in supporting victims.
And the question of faith, Bob, is that something that you have found valuable to you in these months?
It's faith, but it's also the optimism that my wife and myself have always had to try to move forward and help others to make their lives better with our support with organizations like the Women's Community, Cancer Society, Humane Society. We just keep naming them off. We're on this earth for only so long. Might as well make it a better place.
I want to thank all three of you for being with us today. Thank you so much.
I'm going to live forever. I'm going to cross that river. I'm going to catch tomorrow now. I'm going to live forever. I'm going to cross that river. I'm going to catch tomorrow.
We want to thank today's guests, Everest Metro Police Chief Wally Sparks, Jane Graham Jennings of the Women's Community, and former radio host and program director Bob Look. Also thanks to Hmong leader Mao Kang for her help with this program. You can find out more about Wausau's Women's Community at womenscommunity.org. Their 24-hour confidential hotline is 1-888-665-1234. Again, that's 1-888-665-1234. I'm Glenn Moberg. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Janice Schleiss. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Special music today by Edvard Grieg, Jimmy Cliff, Simon and Garfunkel, Graham Parsons and Emmylou Harris, Vince Gill, the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, and Billy Joe Shaver. Next week on Route 51, we examine the difficulties facing the Lincoln Hills School for Boys Youth Prison in Irma. And if you missed part of this program, it will be rebroadcast in its entirety Friday evening at 7 on WHRM 90.9 FM Wausau. Thanks again for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin. And until next week, we're heading out of town.
I'm going to live forever. I'm going to cross that river. I'm going to catch the morning air. I'm going to live forever now. I'm going to live forever now.